Welcome to the Spark Weekly. I'm Marquise Lupton. Grief and sudden loss is described by Johns Hopkins Medical as a death that happens unexpectedly and suddenly, like a fatal accident or a heart attack. And such tragedies can leave survivors feeling shocked and confused and often left with many questions with a range of emotions. And today on the Spark Weekly, we revisit our special on grief and sudden loss.
First, we have Oliette Murray Drobot to discuss the losing of her father at the age of 7 to murder. And we also have Kira St. Clair, who lost a family member in a tragic fire. And then on the back half of the show, we speak with Deb Gonzalez, a grief counselor with Pathway Center for Grief and Loss. And then we bring it all together in our fourth segment, where we will have a overall discussion on grief and sudden loss. I want to thank you all for joining us on The Spark today, especially with this very, very tough topic. So, Kira, we'll start off with you. First and foremost, thank you for joining us on The Spark today.
Yeah, no problem. It's great to be here.
Yes. So, starting off, all right, can you share with us the story of your brother and how you felt during that day?
So it was actually kind of just a wild thing in general, because there were a lot of like irony, you know, around all of it. So it was one of those days I'd wake up very early. I was actually about to go to a Christian camp at the time with a youth group. And so I got up early, and the day before I was talking to my parents about how they wanted to bring him over to my grandmom's house, like bring my brother over to my grandmom's house because we would be gone for a little bit. And as I'm packing, I kept having these feelings where I'm like, I should, you know, wake him up. Maybe we should take him over. We shouldn't let him sleep in the house. Like, I should say good morning at least, just kind of see if he wants to come with, you know, all of those little thoughts. And I kept having those little weird feelings. But as I'm packing up, I'm like, I must just be nervous for, you know, this thing I'm about to do is a whole new adventure. And I kept going back into the house and then kind of leaving, and we finally leave, and I end up on a bus to New York. So I wasn't directly there. It started with my camp counselor was crying on the bus. I didn't know what was going on, had some weird feelings going on. Then I get a Snapchat, actually, which is social media. I have many mixed feelings about it, but I get a Snapchat from my neighbor with pictures of my house burning down. And she asked me what's going on. And I didn't know. I told her, like, I don't know. Like, can you let me know what's going on? And that I actually found out through Snapchat. It was just a simple text that was just like, your brother's dead. And my parents like hadn't been able to contact me or anything. So I didn't get the story until after they drove 10 hours to New York to get me. But I come to find out, like, I guess our electrical had gone a little weird in the kitchen walls. And it unfortunately started a fire that just consumed everything. And so my parents then told me my dad had tried to go back into the house to try and get into through the window to like my brother's room, and he just couldn't get to him. And my mom had showed up on the scene as soon as possible, and apparently it was a whole mess of just ambulances, and there were preachers, and just, you know, the whole I guess typical accident scene that you would see, or like fire scene you would see. But I know there's been like a lot of processing just around that, because I didn't get to technically see it, but I saw it through such a limited lens that it almost makes you imagine more.
Yeah. So for yourself, I mean, you get that message, and I know your mind and imagination are just running wild. Can you take us to that moment and some of the thoughts that were going through your mind, especially after receiving this message through Snapchat?
Yeah, so I honestly was at a McDonald's.
Oh, man.
I was at a McDonald's because we were at a rest stop. Just trying to get some like food and water for this long bus ride. And so I'm at a McDonald's, I'm in the bathroom, and I had some friends trying to comfort me because I was waiting on a snap back because I asked what happened to my little brother. And when I got the message, like, I didn't care about what anybody thought. I really didn't. All I could think about in the moment was like what I just found out. So I kind of like ran out of the McDonald's and just like banged on the window. because I didn't know what to do with like all of that feeling.
Yeah.
So, just kind of like lost it for a second, honestly. And then I just kind of like had to sit on the sidewalk for an hour. And luckily, I had like good people there that were like very willing to just sit with me, and just kind of let me like work through it for a bit. But there was just a lot of like anxiety around it. Like the thing is, it's like as soon as I saw the pictures of my house before I knew anything else, I just had this horrible feeling, and it was like a literal 2 hour long full on anxiety attack. Like just pure like muscle, like I was just stiffened up and not feeling great. So I think in that moment, it was just kind of a release of like all of that at once.
If you don't mind me asking, how old were you, when all of this was going on?
So this was the summer going into my sophomore year of high school. I believe I was 15 at the time.
And can you tell us, also who texted you to let you know this?
So it was my next door neighbor at the time, a girl from high school that I went to. And we honestly, like, we only ever talked on the bus rides when I used to ride the bus. And that, yeah, so I didn't really know her that well, which I think almost made it worse. Like, nothing against her. I just think that made it worse because I'm like, who are you to tell me this kind of information, you know?
So what support systems on did you turn to during these times?
So I think I've been really blessed to just have a various like cycle of people in my life that have just been in my life at the right times. And there's been the people who have stuck with me then for the next like how many years slash to present. But then there's also been the people that I know like they're really only meant to be in a chapter of my life, but they were so needed. And I think like we kind of would tend to help each other. So I feel very blessed in that way, where I've always had like some sort of support system, even if it's pe like people are changing within it. But I feel like they were the type of people that would just know that talking about it didn't help me as much at the time, especially when I was younger, because I honestly wasn't able to process it at first. So they would just know when I wasn't okay, and they would just kind of take action and just be there for me, which was super helpful.
Were there any friends, any neighbors, any family members that really stepped up during this time, during right now, and fill in those gaps, especially dealing with this grief?
Definitely. I also just didn't say much about it. So I think it took people time to know fully, but I don't know if like I should say names, but there were definitely like very specific like people throughout. A lot, it was mostly friends, I'd say. There was a lot of community outreach for my parents, but that was kind of a struggle for me because I feel like I never got seen as like I'm struggling. So I ended up becoming like an intense people pleaser in that way, where I would just kind of like try and take care of my parents and everyone else and not like focus on me with that, because it was easier to focus on those. So it was just more so like I would say friends were helpful. And then family tried, community tried, but it just didn't feel as like outreaching at the time, or like it didn't feel like it really, you know, helped as much. Even though they tried their best, which I can appreciate.
And how are you coping today?
I definitely agree with the phrase that grief comes in waves. Because it really does just hit you at certain times, and there will be times where I feel like, okay, I fully processed it. I'm okay now. And then other times where it's just a complete, it feels like it's almost starting over. And it really just it changes. And you see things like on social media a lot about how like, well, losing someone who's still alive is worse. Like people say that so confidently, but it's not something I feel as if you can even compare, because I've gone through both. And so like it's not really comparable. And I don't love when people say things so boldly like that, because it really does, it's all different. It all affects you differently. It all depends on the circumstances, and it will hit you at different times in different ways. And I think that this kind of grief, is it's become more underlying now. So like it won't hit me as harshly, like I guess where it would make me cry randomly, or like where songs don't affect me as much now as they used to. But there's always that underlying like monologue in my head about it kind of thing. So,
Kara, I want to thank you for just opening up to us and really letting us into your space, into your mind, into your heart, dealing with this. First and foremost, thank you for joining us on The Spark today, Oliette.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, yes, indeed. So can you tell us what happened?
It happened so many years ago. Mm-hmm. My parents were separated at the time, and my dad had moved back home to this little small town in Arkansas. And at the time, my aunt was dating a guy who had been abusive, had been physically violent with her a number of times. Mm. And there was an incident between the two of them. Things got out of hand. The boyfriend pulled out a gun and just started shooting everywhere. Oh, wow. And unfortunately, at that time, my father was shot. And so he died on the scene.
And how has your personal experience of losing your father so soon, how has that shaped you as a adult?
Yeah, so I was a daddy's girl. I was extremely close to my father. He loved music, and we spent a lot of time together listening to James Brown and Jimi Hendrix. And we would sing along and have, you know, these concerts, and he was showing me the latest dance moves. And so it was I can't even explain just this huge loss and this significant person missing from my life and, you know, child development and being a child and, you know, and going through that development, right? That's a critical time, right? And so, yeah, it's just been something that's always been there. It was sudden, didn't really have time to even to process it. Mm-hmm. And at the time, we're talking about many years ago, therapy really wasn't a thing. And so, you know, my mom was young. My mom was only 24, had two kids. I was the oldest. And so we kind of just pushed through it. You know, she was working, we're going to school, right? And it wasn't until many years later, well, I was dealing with some depression and I was seeing a therapist. And just through a series of conversations, we realized that I had never really grieved my father's death. Mm. It was just something that happened and we just, you know, pushed through it and uncovered a lot of emotions that I had around it. And so I kind of went through this process, went to a grieving counselor, someone to help me process it. We had a ceremony for me to be able to say goodbye to my father, because I realized we had the funeral. But again, you know, it was just so busy and so many things going on that I, you know, at the time, being at such a young age, I could really process it. So, and I realized, it's not really something I've really gotten over. The days are much easier now. I've been able to celebrate his life in so many ways, but that loss has led to the lot of work that I chose to do as a career.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the work that you're doing in just a little bit. I've been told that grief isn't something that you get over. It's something that you learn to live with. And Kara, you brought up the point that it comes in waves. So for you, Oliette, how did it or how does it come in waves? Because you were seven.
Yeah, I would say it certainly shows up for me at significant points in my life. You know, when I graduated from college, he wasn't there, you know, to help me celebrate that moment. When I got married, he couldn't walk me down the aisle. When my father died when he was 27. So when I turned 27, I sat with that and just realize the significance of that, you know, being so young and him no longer being with us. There are certain things I remember looking at a documentary. There was a lot of violence being portrayed. I just could not sit there and watch it. You know, there are certain things now after I've gone through a lot of therapy and everything, there are just certain things I can't really sit with and watch. There are certain songs, you know, Jimi Hendrix or James Brown comes up, and there are memories that pop up for me.
Yeah.
It is much easier now, but again, that feeling really never goes away. There's I kind of describe it as this hole that's there that will never quite be filled. It's always there.
Yeah. Now, I've had many different discussions with my friends, and it's almost a different response every single time. When you lose a parent early, and then you yourself surpass your parents' age, how did you feel at that time, knowing that you have surpassed your father's age?
Yeah, I felt really blessed. Just a blessing of being able to, you know, get older. I think it's really helped me to be thoughtful. I think I became a people pleaser and an overachiever because, you know, I'm here. I get to do things that he was not able to do. And so, you know, I've chosen to, you know, talk about him and write about him. I've talked to groups that have experienced violence in their lives. It just makes me feel more blessed. I think it makes me to be thankful for each and every day that I'm here, because you know, we don't all get to grow older in life.
Yeah, growing old is a privilege. That is what I'm told many, many times. So before we go to our break here, I do want to touch on the work that you do. So can you tell us? Can you tell the audience the work that you do?
Yeah, so I've been really engaged in social justice work for most of my career, and I chose to really focus on safety and justice. And a lot of that has been around healing work, communities that have been impacted by violence, families impacted by violence. So I'm really involved in the last few years around restorative justice and transformative justice, because I really do feel, I think, as your other panelist said, about communities wrapping their arms around families and individuals that have been impacted by harm, and how important that is, just having those supports there and folks that care about you. So I've been really engaged in that sort of work in the last several years.
Now, this is going to seem like an obvious question, but why did you begin this work?
I think it was part of my healing process. And I recall I was a part of a group that was coming together. I really didn't know the folks we were meeting for the first time, and we were doing what you call a peacemaking circle, where you come together and someone may read a passage or a poem, and you just talk about how that resonates with you. So it gets to me, and I'm holding this, what we call a talking stick, and I start to talk, and it just kind of hit me at that time about the loss of my father because of the poem. And I start crying in front of all these folks that I didn't know. Of course, afterwards, I was terrified. You know, I was like, oh my goodness, I was so vulnerable around folks I didn't know. But the number of people who walked up to me and just said, wow, how much that meant to them. And at the time, I was already doing some work, but I realized I still had a lot of healing to do. And so there was just some opportunities to engage in this work. And that's what, it, you know, led me to do it.
And with this loss happening at such a young age, do you still hear your father's voice? I know for myself, you know, there'll be from time to time I'll hear my dad's voice. Hey, son, you know, checking in, you know, something of that sort. Do you still hear your father's voice?
Unfortunately, because I was so young, I don't recall how just the sound of his voice. I, you know, for me, I have pictures of him on my desk. So I feel like I'm always surrounded by him. I speak about him all the time with some of my writing. I openly talk about our relationship and what that relationship meant to me. And I think because of that loss, the significance it's played in my life in terms of even the work I've chosen to do as a career. So, and again, although I don't hear his voice, I think I, you know, I'm surrounded by his spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And that has just, it just lives within me, you know, and it will always be there.
Stay tuned for more of The Spark Weekly. On the other side of the break, we speak with grief counselor Deb Gonzalez. You're listening to The Spark Weekly. Welcome back to The Spark Weekly. I'm Marquise Lupton. We're continuing our broadcast special on grief and sudden loss. We just listened to Kira and Oliette about their bouts with grief and sudden loss. And now, here's Deb Gonzalez, grief counselor with Pathways Center for Grief and Loss. First and foremost, Deb, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Marquise, for having me here today.
Yes, indeed. So so we talked about this huge, huge emotion called grief. So this is going to seem like a large question here, but where can we begin to start the healing process for grief? Or how should we begin the healing process when dealing with grief?
Well, grief is individual, right? It's what is grief to you is not to me, right? So we all grieve different things, different losses. And in this case, we are talking about sudden losses.
Mm-hmm.
We start the process of grief from the moment that we know that that person had died. That is that intense feeling that you receive, that it's in your gut feeling, that you feel that you can't breathe, that you feel that something big has happened.
Mm.
And I think that Kara explained very well, you know, when she learned about the loss in the way that she reacted physically and emotionally.
Mm. Yes. And how do sudden and unexpected deaths affect our physical well-being?
Well, that's a great question. Affects all the part of us, as affect us physically, emotionally, cognitive, spiritual. You know, we have visceral reactions to that. Sometimes we can't breathe. I think that Kara also mentioned that she felt stiff.
Mm.
And the great emotion that she had to hit the windows on McDonald's, right? So that is a body reaction to this immense pain that we are receiving and we don't know how to work with it at that moment.
Mm. Now, between our two other guests, we saw the difference with Oliette. She didn't have social media during her time versus Kira finding out, you know, basically via social media. Does that play a role in the way you find out, especially being on social media? Does that take a toll on your mental health?
It does. I think they care very well mentioned, you know, when this person sent the information via Snapchat and then others had shared. So she didn't even have the information from her parents or from the police or from someone that could deliver the news in a different way. It was done like one more thing that we are sharing right now in Facebook or Snapchat or any other social media. So it takes away that privacy, that comfort that other people could have offered to her at the time and put her into that situation just right there and then. With no support, even the other people became supportive of her, but they didn't know what was going on either. Mm. So yeah, so it does affect people emotionally, physically, and she spoke about anger as well, you know, finding out this way. So it affects in many, many ways, especially because you might not have the person that could comfort or provide the right information to you.
Mm. And how about the person that has to deliver the message to the person that their loved one has passed on. I'll use myself as an example. When I found out that my mother-in-law passed suddenly from a heart attack, I sat with that for about 2 hours because my wife was taking a nap and I did not know how to deliver that message to her. So to the person that is delivering the message, is there some kind of mental fight that's going on with them?
Well, it is very hard to talk about this at any age. And, you know, so if there's a policeman delivering the news versus you as a person delivering the news to your wife, right? So you already processed that, you had a little time to process that for yourself. And then you were going to deliver that to the best of your ability, right? And then try to be for her as supportive as you could, right? So the process of delivering a news, it's one that sometimes people take on their own. Like in Kiara's case, it was through social media. Mm-hmm. And there are other circumstances where in the militia, for example, someone knocks at your door. Mm-hmm. There's no phone call or anything like that. That someone delivered that news in person. So, of course, all this impacts in the way that you receive the news as well. But any of us, you know, at some point we had to deliver bad news to someone, right? It's just taking a minute, breathing, analyzing what you could say, and then deliver that news to the best of the ability with the information that you have, not adding or taking away. And that is the truth for adults and the truth for children as well.
Now, how can we navigate triggers? Because as we discussed, this comes in waves. This grief, this emotional feeling comes in waves. And we all heard and know about triggers. So how can we navigate these triggers? Because even Oliette brought up listening to Jimi Hendrix and so forth. So how can we navigate these?
So music, food, places, events. Oliette spoke about milestones, you know, as a child, you know, graduating from high school, getting married. All these are milestones, you know, having children. She also mentioned the age. Thank you for doing that, because there's a lot of people that have lost their parents very young. And when they reach that age, she spoke about being blessed of getting older. Mm-hmm. And for others, it's like a guilt, like I made it to this and he didn't or she didn't. Right. So there's always like two sides to the same story. Mm-hmm. And it's difficult when you see that milestone and you feel like, oh, my God, you know, like now I'm the age of my mom or my dad, you know, what that means to me. So it could bring us also to a lot of questionings, you know, I have done this. Do I like feel like I have achieved? I feel I have to do more? Do I feel that I have let them down? You know, so there's a lot of things in triggers that sometimes pass by ourselves and we don't think about them, but it could be a day, it could be an hour, you know, it could be a phone call that you did once a week. So it could be the supermarket that you went in and just saw the things that you used to buy for them. Yeah. So triggers means all of those things. How you deal with them is what helps you by recognizing them is the first thing, you know, recognizing that that's a trigger and creating new memories in a new relationship with that person, because it's not a physical like it used to be, but more emotional and spiritual. And that is the integration of that person in our lives.
Oh, wow. Wow. I love that. You mentioned guilt. So what role does guilt play in the emotional aftermath of sudden loss?
Well, you know, guilt for different reasons. Guilt because I wasn't there. Guilt because I didn't say something. Guilt because it was the last time that we were together, we didn't talk in good terms, or I haven't seen him or her in a while. So guilt can be for different situations at different point in our life. When we have those feelings of guilt, sometimes we had placed in ourselves expectations that we couldn't meet. right? Like, I feel guilty that that person died. I would have given my life for that, right? But that's not realistic. And that wouldn't happen, right? So it's all this that is in our mind and how we view things, the perception of things that make us feel guilty. Like, I could have done more, or I should have, or would have. And then it comes back as guilt to us. What I try to tell people is, like, let's think about this. How do you think that you could have really effectively made a difference, right? And even if you would have, it wasn't at the time. Sometimes we don't have the information at that time. And we make our decision with the best information that we have at that time. Mm-hmm. Of course, later on, we will learn more and know more, but we can't fix what we did before.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Deb, why is it common for individuals to replay the details of the events in their minds about this sudden death and loss?
Because we are trying to make sense. We are trying to make sense of what happened. And, you know, we are affected by these losses at a different age in our lives, right? So at one point, this is what this loss meant to me. At this other point, this is what it meant to me. So we revise the situation. We want to make sure that we remember the situation, even if it could be painful, as painful can be, but we don't want to forget them. And because we don't want to forget them, we want to have our facts straight. Even they, it might not be the real facts, but those are to us. And we want to make sure that people know the story the way that I'm telling the story, right? For Kiara, unfortunately, she didn't have someone that could support her and tell the story. For Aliette, I heard, you know, that someone told her, you know, what had happened. So it's different. So, yeah, the revisiting of the events, I think that Kiara and Aliette did a very good job taking us through what happened and when it happened and how it happened and the feelings that they had. So we don't forget.
Yeah.
We could relate to our loved ones, not through the pain. We could evolve through and create a healthy relationship of remembering and rituals, like I heard from Aliette. And that was very interesting because she spoke about support groups, even though she didn't mention it as support groups, but it was a group and she spoke and she cried and all that. And that made sense. And others were there for her, supporting her at that moment. Even there was how many years after, right? It was her processing of that loss and that moment that made sense.
This has been a fantastic panel. I want to thank you all for agreeing to do this. I am feeling great. I am telling you that I am ready to go outside and tackle a bull. That's how you know, invigorated I'm really feeling right now. So, Deb, this one is for you. Successful tactics when dealing with grief, what do they look like?
First of all, kindness to ourselves and self-compassion. Those are the two things that we miss because we want to fix everything, but we don't think about that. So self-compassion gives you the grace, you know, to be with yourself and not have the need to fix it. And you are there with yourself, which sometimes we don't do, right? Kindness to ourselves is because I want to treat myself like my best friend. Like, if somebody's in grief and my best friend is in grief, I would say, you need to take care of you. You need to take it easy. You need to others to help you. Right. So I want to do that for myself. I want to make sure that I am taking care of myself. And then normalizing our loss. Sometimes we think that we are the only ones that are going through that type of loss. And for example, here at the Pathway Center for Grief and Loss, we have support groups for different losses, loss of a child, loss of a parent, loss of a spouse. And then we have different workshops throughout the year also did target different losses like sudden death and loss by suicide and other different losses. So when you attend those groups and people are talking about their grief, then it's very similar like yours. So it helps you normalize your grief. It helps to place it in a space that you can understand that this is more than what you thought, right? And that you have to give the space and the grace to work with it.
Kira, for you, How do you successfully walk in your grief?
It's honestly been a bumpy path here and there. It took me a long time to even process it. So I think it's honestly a more recent thing that I've been able to successfully walk in it because, like Deb was saying, I've been more focused on myself and more focused on taking care of me and letting myself sit in those emotions when I didn't for like 6 years. Took me a long time. And so I now like let myself, I make sure I don't distract myself all the time. I still do it, but I try to do it a lot less. And I just kind of like let myself sit in that. And I'll typically go to a lot of like creative outlets. I like poetry and music, sometimes even just drawing, even though I can't draw great. And that really helps. So, yeah.
And Oliette, for you, how do you successfully walk in your grief?
Yeah, I think it's been really opening and talking about my relationship with my dad. I've spoken about it to various groups. I write, I've written essays. And again, I keep a picture of him on my desk. And listening to music, those creative outlets have been really helpful. I think also been involved with work. There are a lot of folks who are counselors and supporting other folks. And I think just being around them where I can be open, about moments where I may have a memory or listening to something and, you know, it for a moment and just being able to be open about it. And I will say too, I've learned to be more vulnerable and open with my husband about when I'm having those moments. And yeah, whereas in the past, I think I was more of in a state of trying to protect myself. And now I think through growth, I feel more comfortable about being vulnerable and just being open about what I'm feeling.
And I want to talk about that, Oliette. I'm gonna ask you this, and then Kara, you can answer this as well. Oliette, what was the turning point for yourself when dealing with this grief, when you became, for lack of better terms here, bigger than the grief?
I think it might have been those many years ago when I was a part of that group. And in that moment, hearing that poem and how it resonated with me and just having that flood of emotions and being vulnerable in that moment. And I think that was really the first time I had really opened up about, my relationship with my father and the loss of my father. I think it had been something I just buried in terms of emotions. Like I said, we didn't really think about a therapist at the time, right? Or that there was a process that we could potentially go through, right, with some support. And I think at that moment, it was so profound for me. And I was really vulnerable at the time. Again, I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe I've just opened up and cried in front of complete strangers. But I think in some ways, it was such a relief for me. And that opened up the door for me to really start to explore those emotions that I had buried away for so many years.
And Kira, for you, when was the turning point for you when you became bigger than your grief?
Well, I just want to say, Oliette like really nails it on the head with a lot of what she says. I would say mine is a collection of many little moments. I think it started as soon as I had freedom at college because I really was becoming a parent for my parents for a bit. I felt like I was kind of holding the family together. So I think once I had that freedom to be with myself is kind of when I started therapy as well again. And I think I just kind of like broke down a few times because I just realized there was so much inside that I hadn't even known was there. Because I was so good at distracting myself and, distracting myself with others. And so it's kind of been a collection over time. More so recently where like I'll have moments, like was mentioned, where I'll talk with my dad very openly and honest about what had happened. And that is, it really changes your mind about some things or opens your mind to different perspectives because both of my parents were so closed off for so long that now knowing how they're actually feeling about some of it and talking through that with them, I still struggle to be vulnerable. So I won't always like go deep with him, But I like at least hearing it and sitting with them in the moments. And same with my mom. And I think just, like I said, a little collection of those moments really helps you to kind of like, you know, open your mind to it more, sit with it, and process all of it.
Yes, yes, indeed. And Deb, for the person that is at home right now, that is currently dealing with grief and don't know what to do with all of these emotions, what would you say to them?
Well, first of all, for all of those that have different losses, you know, our condolences to all of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Kiara and Oliet said, grief comes in waves, meaning that we could be okay at this moment and half an hour from now we can be crying or we feel too emotional, right? Or we don't want to be outside because we want to isolate ourselves from those feelings and people not asking us and all these kind of things, right? Sometimes the death also can be public, so there's more attention into that. So you do what works for you, right? And that means that if you can't go to the supermarket around the corner, so go to a further one. If you go to church and you feel like you don't want to go to church at 10 in the morning that you used to, so then go to the service in the evening. You know, make adjustments in your life so you can accommodate a space for your grief. Please do not run away from your grief. Do not push it through down, you know, and ignore. Because like Kiara and Oliet said, grief will come back in different ways. And then when it comes back, it's like bigger than what you thought, just like Kiara said, you know, overwhelming. And now you have to deal with that. So surround yourself from caring friends. Have someone that you really can talk. If people are saying you should be okay in 6 months, a year, that's not right. That's right. Not okay. We had a relationship for the longest time. I said, if I'm 50 years old, that's the relationship that I had with my parents. So I can't just ignore. So take care of yourself. Be your best friend.
And on behalf of Scott Lamar and myself, Marquise Lupton, I want to thank you for making us a part of your day and joining us on The Spark Weekly. Have yourself a great day.